In Philippians 2, the Bible instructs us to do everything without murmuring and disputing. Paul reminded the believers that they were living in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, and that they should shine as lights in the world. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliott, helping you to run the race of life each day with an eternal view. We have a question and answer session today. Let's get started.
How do you maintain a consistent devotional life? For example, 1 hour every morning. I seem to have such great beginnings. We all know that everybody does what they really want to do. I have never heard of a man who didn't have time to watch the World Series. I mean, somehow or other, we find time, we make time, we arrange our schedules to do what we really want to do. I saw a woman on TV who had written the definitive history of the Civil War, 1,000 pages or something, and she was the mother of 4 young children. And the interviewer said to her, "How did you ever find the time to do it?" And she just smiled. She said, "We all find time to do what we want to do." So if you want to have your devotions, then you will get yourself out of bed early in the morning. And as Valerie said, there's lots of scriptural precedent for that. The psalmist said, "Early in the morning will I seek thee." Jesus got up a great while before day and went out to the mountain to pray. So if we're honest with ourselves, most of us know that there really isn't going to be any other time except early in the morning that can be fairly sure to be uninterrupted. Some of you might be able to arrange some other time, but that's the ideal time. And there's no easy answer to that. My father got up every morning between 4:30 and 5, and people would say to him, "How do you do it?" And he said, "It's very simple. You start the night before." In other words, you've got to go to bed early enough to be able to get yourself up, which means you're going to have to scratch a lot of things that happen in the evening that everybody thinks you have to do. Everybody expects you to do. He didn't do those things. Referring to your statement that God's grace in our life is never hindered by evil, only by our own will, you always emphasize God and our surrender to Him. How does the activity of Satan fit into this? Is there ever a time to resist Satan or rebuke him? I don't know about rebuking him, because, you know, the archangel refused to deal directly with Satan. He fought with him, but he did not address him. I think that's in the book of Jude. We need to be very cautious about this business of addressing Satan, but certainly we are to resist him. The Bible clearly says that. Flee from temptation. Get yourself out of there. And we have that definitive chapter of Ephesians 6, of putting on the armor of God. Let's never ignore the fact that the world is full of evil, that Satan is filled with wiles, and he is going to do everything in his power to prevent you from doing the will of God. He can't stand it. So we need the armor of God, but let's not focus primarily on Satan. There are a lot of people that see a demon under every stone. That's a dangerous trend, I think. This person says, "It's comforting to think only of God and that He controls all details of our life, but what about when you see the evil touching your life? For example, my husband's father is into pornography, child abuse, wife abuse, etc. Well, I don't have to look at anybody else's life to see evil. I see it in my own life, and so I pray against that, and I pray for God's forgiveness. And certainly, the will of God is in total control of everything. I don't have to worry about how does Satan's work fit into God's sovereignty, because God is clearly sovereign over everything. Remember that Jesus says in the end of chapter 14 of John, "The prince of this world is on his way. He has no rights over me. But the world must be shown that I love the Father and will do exactly what he says." Now, he was on his way to the cross, and Satan was going to do his worst. The worst thing that human beings ever perpetrated against another human being was the crucifixion. Where was God when his son was nailed to the cross? In sovereign control. And he allowed that. It behooved Christ to suffer. It pleased the Lord to bruise him. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things? And God allows that same prince of this world power over you and me, but he does not have any rights over us. As Christians, remember, Satan has no rights, but the same thing that Jesus was about to demonstrate, you and I are to demonstrate every day. The world must be shown that I love the Father and will do exactly what he says. If a handicapped child is born to you, that's a deep sorrow. It's a reminder that we live in a fallen world. Evil happens. But the world must be shown you love the Father and will do exactly what he says. Every trial that comes into your life, every evil that touches you, of course is from the evil one, but it is there by the permission of the God who loves you, just as the crucifixion was there, not only by the permission, but by the expressed will of God. Can you figure all this out intellectually to your satisfaction? We're not supposed to. We are supposed to believe that God means what he says. And that's where trust comes in. Trust and obey, for there's no other way. Now, we have been discussing love, the fundamental calling. That was our first talk, and that is the foundation of the Christian home. Love one another as I have loved you. We don't always like each other, do we? We are not commanded anywhere in the Bible to like each other. We can't always be in control of our emotions. We can't summon up a good feeling about somebody. But the kind of love that God is commanding of you and me can only be commanded because it's action. It is not emotion. If I don't feel good about you, if I don't really like you, then what good does it do for me to try to love you? I don't even like you. Well, they're two very different things. We like people who have the same interests we have. We like people who like us. We like people with whom we have things in common. But that's a very small segment of the human race. But we are commanded to love everybody, including our enemies. And I get women asking me, how do I love my husband who acts this way and this way and this way? And I say, well, if worse comes to worse, then you have to treat your husband as an enemy. What does God tell you you're supposed to do with your enemies? Love them. It's a command. So that's what the fundamental calling is, and there will not be any other foundation for the truly Christian home unless there is an understanding that love is required. Unselfishness, self-giving, my life for yours. And when we have submitted to the authority of God and established verbal authority over our children, we have begun the most important lessons in authority for our children. If they learn to obey you at home, to respect you, to teach you, to treat you honorably and respectfully and obediently, there will be absolutely no problem in their respecting police officers, teachers, and any other form of authority under which God has placed all of us. And I do want to emphasize the importance of the example that we set. I think we teach our children a hatred of work by our own attitudes toward work. If we are the sort of people who talk about TGIF, thank God it's Friday, but this is Blue Monday, we give the impression to our children that we hate everything except our leisure time. And everything else we do grudgingly, and we do because we have to and we can't get out of it. Work is a gift. Ask Johnny Erickson Tada, for example. Ask Carolyn Winstead. Her friend Nancy was telling us in the small group that Carolyn will make 10 trips from the car into the house because Carolyn only has one arm that works. And Nancy said, I've been trying to figure out how I would do things with one arm because she's Carolyn's friend. We can't do it. No, do you ever thank God for the two arms you have? Well, of course, Johnny Erickson Tada can't do anything in the way of physical work. anything at all. She would give everything she possesses to be able to put her feet on the floor and stand up. God has given us tremendous gift in work, in physical work, and teach your children to love it. And you've got to learn to love it yourself. As somebody has said, if you can't do what you like what you do. And my mother made a point of teaching us not only to like what we did, but to do everything quickly as well as thoroughly, everything that has to be done. For example, you have to get up, you have to get dressed, you have to make your bed, you have to bring yourself into some kind of civilized order every day. Learn to do those things quickly. Makes sense, doesn't it? Then you have time left for the optional things. But learn to do them quickly and do them cheerfully and do them well. I happen to love housework. It's no problem at all for me to love housework because the much harder work that I do is at my desk. So housework for me is just recreation. Some of you think, all I have to do is housework. What wouldn't I give to be able to sit down at a desk? It's just the old grass is greener on the other side of the fence thing, you know. Whatever God has given you to do, do it cheerfully as to the Lord. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with all thy might, and do it as unto the Lord. I heard somebody say, I didn't do one thing for the Lord that day. We should be able to say, everything I did was for the Lord. Whether it was brushing your teeth, or cooking the meal, or doing the laundry, or getting on the train and going to work, or to sitting in a traffic jam for an hour and a half, offer it to the Lord, and the offering up makes it sanctified. What is the work God has given you to do?
Anything, if offered to God, can and will become your gateway to joy. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.